And welcome to another exciting episode of Extra Credit, where we haven't done one of these in a long while.
But
this is the episode where we kind of talk about the stuff where we actually want to talk about, and we leave the episode to the actual intellectuals. This is more for the class clowns.
Okay, I'm like...
it's the same people.
I'm like, are you trying to say that we don't care about our normal content?
No, we do. We love our normal content. This is the one where we kind of get to, you know, unbutton that top button, kind of talk about the things that we actually...
Get a little looser, a little wider.
Well, you made it sound like we didn't even pick our own content.
Spencer.
I'm just saying what you said.
Spencer.
I'm bouncing it back.
Magical. But in the previous episode, if you haven't heard it, Lesson 131, where we talked about end of the world films from Netflix, it seemed fitting that as we were talking about end of the world films, that we made the segue to something that was dropped this week, a trailer, if you will, that signified the beginning of what was the end of the MCU, I guess, if you could say. You actually, Chad, you put it a little bit more eloquently than I am.
You want me to go ahead and pinch hit this
one? Go for it.
So, those of you who've been listening for a long time to the podcast, and if you haven't, then welcome to the crew. Please don't hesitate to catch up. You'll know that we all tend to be fans of the work that has gone into the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
That we have.
The most recent film, Ant-Man and the Wasp, is episode number 120, lesson 120. You can listen to that review. And if you track back a little bit further, you'll notice that when Infinity War came out, Avengers Infinity War, we actually did a three-part multi-episode arc, if you will, discussing what we thought was going to happen, what actually happened, and the ramifications of what we think might happen next.
Yep.
So Infinity War was really kind of the end of what we have known of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. It was the end of the world, in a sense. Half of all life in the universe was snapped out of existence by Thanos.
Mm-hmm.
Presumably.
Presumably.
I mean, that's what appears to have happened. And so at the very, 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 very end, in an end credit scene, you see the tease for Captain Marvel, which is Nick Fury, who's played by Samuel L. Jackson. He's been a mainstay throughout the duration of these films and is responsible for pulling the Avengers together. We've known for a few months that he, a younger version of his character, is one of the main elements, if you will, of the Captain Marvel film. And so in the tease, at the end of Infinity War, you see him pull out a 90s era pager with some modifications and send a message before he gets dusted. And the symbol on the screen is what comic book fans will recognize as Captain Marvel's symbol, Carol Danvers.
Yes.
Captain Marvel. There are a couple of different Captain Marvels in the history of the comics. And so today, or well, this week, we finally saw our first teaser trailer of the Captain Marvel film. So obviously, Nick Fury thinks that this character is powerful enough to intervene in a major way in whatever's going on that has caused him and others to lose their lives, apparently.
Yeah.
And he calls out, signals to her, and that's all that any casual moviegoer knows. You don't know who the character is, what they're all about, what they can do, why he would wait until now to reach out to her. And the beginnings of some of those answers are going to come in the spring when we see Captain Marvel.
And so, as we were saying, something was dropped this week as fans finally got a full look. So a teaser had dropped a few weeks ago via Entertainment Weekly on socials and their websites and all that, in partnership with Brie Larson, the actress who is playing Captain Marvel, Carol Danvers. As of today, which is, well, as of this week, we now have the first full trailer of the film so that, you know, to promote the Captain Marvel film coming out next year. Needless to say, the internet is going nuts over this. I mean, from not only finally having some glimmer of hope after what had happened at the end of Infinity War, like understanding what that hope is going to look like in the follow-up Avengers film, not only do we have a glimpse of who Samuel L. Jackson's character Nick Fury called, but now we have an opportunity to delve into the cosmic aspect of the Marvel universe more so than just Thor and the Guardians, which has been great, but this is now treading into characters that are so powerful, you know, they may even be more powerful than Thor. I mean, right now, as what the Russo brothers are calling it, and what other directors in the Marvel, or Kevin Feige himself has said, that Captain Marvel will be the most powerful MCU character in this universe. And that's saying a lot, because like we said, you had somebody who, like Thor, went toe-to-toe with Thanos, and...
Well, and as of Ragnarok, he totally leveled up.
Yeah, yeah, completely.
You know, all on his own, before even facing Thanos.
So now...
And then he leveled up again, kind of, with Stormbreaker.
No, 100%. No, no doubt. Now we got our first full look at what the film is going to look like, and I just have to say, gentlemen, it looks incredible. Like, plain and simple, I love the 90s aesthetics. I love the way the film looks. Samuel L. Jackson looks like he's coming straight out of, you know, some, you know, one of the 90s films, like from Die Hard 2. He looks like straight up, was it Die Hard 2 or 3?
3.
Die Hard 3. I don't know what it is that Marvel keeps doing to continue to build up and make their de-aging software work so well, but it's getting better and better, like every time. Like, I remember when the first time they tried to use that with... Wow, which character was it? Was it Robert Downey Jr. the first time they tried to use the de-aging?
Ooh. That was the most prominent
use. Yeah,
that was not good.
That was a little rough. And then you had Ant-Man, where they tried to de-age...
Michael Douglas,
as well as a couple other individuals. And it was a little rough as well. But then you look at Ant-Man 2, and they de-age Michael Douglas again, and they de-age Michelle Pfeiffer, which Michelle Pfeiffer looks like timeless. She always looks great. I don't know about you guys, but they did a great job with those in that particular film.
Here's a napkin.
Thank you. And so in this film, like, it doesn't even look like they had to it doesn't look like they use software, because it looks that seamless. And I know I'm kind of talking about this, but like, from a technological standpoint, that is impressive. Like,
oh, 100%.
If you can put a character who has aged and they want to put a particular time period on a film, and they're going to use the actor, if they can use that type of software, I mean, let's be honest, the de-aging they did to Carrie Fisher in Rogue One was not good at all. Like, it looked like she came out of like a Robert Zemeckis animated film. And then you look at General Tarkin. General Tarkin was another one whom they, obviously he wasn't alive to be able to do that part, but the way his character looked, it looked completely animated. There was no sense of realism there.
True.
Whereas with these individuals,
even though they had a stand-in, they had a guy who looked very similar stand-in, and then they painted on top of him.
Yeah. But I think that was a really cool standout thing that I noticed right away.
Well, it should be said, Samuel L. Jackson is not the only character of that sort that we've seen an older version of the character, and now we see a younger version of the same character played by the same actor.
That's right.
Because we also have Clark Gregg finally returning to the big screen as Agent Coulson.
Yep.
From the 90s with some hair.
and he looks like, much like Samuel L. Jackson, it looks natural. It really does. And it's a standout type of feat that you don't really see done that well in most other films. And to see it continuing to better itself into really, like, whether if it's using AI or however, whatever they're doing, kudos to Marvel for that, you know, just in that aspect. But I do love the 90s aesthetic. I do like the way this film looks, just setting-wise. But to speak towards the character, I know, Chad, you're a huge fan of the character, and you kind of have more information on this particular character and what you're seeing and how it's being portrayed on screen as opposed to what's in the comics and whatnot. And
yeah, I mean, Captain Marvel is a very complicated character, especially even with the reality of having established the cosmic side of the MCU through Guardians and Thor. And so, you can get away with a few of the more fantastical elements of the way that universe works. But Carol Danvers has a very complicated pathway towards superherodom, if you will. And I think it's really compelling that it's, it looks like they're going to kind of just shortcut around a lot of it, which,
thank God,
is not a bad thing in this case. We've seen enough superhero origins at this point that to kind of gloss over it a little bit so we can get more of the feisty action.
Yeah.
Like what makes you a hero now? I think that's a really healthy decision because, yeah, I mean, it's just very complicated. She's like a fighter pilot. She encounters who turns out to be an alien warrior from another planet. He's a Kree warrior called Mar-Vell, and there's a device that sort of scrambles their brainwaves and genetics and whatever at some point, and then she becomes half human, half Kree, you know, alien. And now she has abilities, and she eventually way down the road starts calling herself Ms. Marvel. And only more recently has she adopted Captain Marvel, because Mar-Vell went by Captain Marvel. That character eventually passed away, has come back and passed away and come back and passed away a couple different times, I think, by this point. But she took over the moniker Captain Marvel a lot more recently, and she's very much leveled up in terms of her prominence in the comic books.
Yeah.
When they did Civil War II a couple of years back, they had the conflict now be between Iron Man and Captain Marvel instead of Iron Man and Captain America.
Yeah.
Because of her role and her position and her confidence and her swagger and her feistiness. There's a lot to love about this character. And to introduce her as the bridge between Phase 3 and Phase 4, you know, whatever this giant transitional moment is, with Infinity War and Avengers 4, title TBD, to have her as that X Factor element.
Yeah.
Coming in with her own movie right before we see how things shake out in Avengers 4, and then she is the flagship character by all indications from Kevin Feige, moving into Phase 4. So it's going to be quite the year for the character, and hopefully Brie Larson as well. She was cast 2 years ago, introduced at Comic-Con, two Comic-Cons ago. Mm-hmm. So this has been in the hopper for a long time.
That it has.
And it's very refreshing to finally see something, because we've seen not only Samuel L. Jackson and Clark Gregg on the cast list, we've also seen Lee Pace and Jaimon Hunsu, who both played characters in the first Guardians film who didn't make it.
Yeah.
So now you're seeing earlier versions of two characters, and you're not sure if they're bad guys or good guys. And now you've got the introduction of the Skrulls, which is a different race of aliens who can change their shape and composition to look like anybody.
Yeah.
Even an old lady on a train.
And I think that's, to kind of go back to what you were saying earlier, I think that is really one of the standout things that Marvel is choosing to do with this, in not creating another backstory type of film, like going through all that mess, which was seen in successful in the Black Panther film, because it doesn't go through the whole, like, oh, this is how it becomes Black Panther, this is how he realizes he's Black Panther, this is how he realizes he can step into the mantle and blah, blah, blah. It's not about that. It's about him already being the Black Panther, stepping into the role of a whole different type of authority and becoming that as the Black Panther, as the character as is, and learning as the character. This is one of those instances where you can clearly see Brie Larson is a powerhouse when she arrives on Earth, and it is through flashbacks and memories that she realizes she may have had ties to Earth prior to whatever her training was. And it looks like it's not going to delve too much into that, which is great, because as comic book fans, we're already in a society where everybody is picking up a comic. Everybody is reading a comic. Everybody's subscribed to some subscription service online or in their comic book store. They got their savers. Everybody is already reading the comic. So everybody within the last 2 years, like Chad said, since it's been announced, everybody has already done their homework. So they know how she comes about.
Yeah.
They know who she is. They know her origin story. They know all the origin stories, probably. That's not what people want to see. They want to see this character in action. Kevin Feige promised this was going to be the most powerful MCU character currently in the universe. Let's see that power fly.
Well, and it definitely is a nice change of pace to kind of have somebody who, like, you're going to get enough of her origin for you know, those who do want to know how she started. But for her, it looks like this is a case of the character discovering it for herself,
mm-hmm.
rather than just let's show the audience. Like, her memory has been wiped or glossed over or something, and she, once she returns to Earth, in what presumably would be the inciting incident,
mm-hmm.
And in the comics, there's a very famous arc called the Kree-Skrull War, mm-hmm. where these two alien races are at war with each other. Earth is caught in the middle, so this is likely to be a tie-in to that, a cinematic representation or adaptation of that, at least in part. But for her to crash to Earth and start recalling that she actually came from here and she didn't have that knowledge before, that's a different way of doing an origin story.
Yeah.
You don't have to wait until the origin part is done, the origination, to start having her, like, kick some serious tail and mm-hmm. show off her power set. Like, she can do that in the meantime because she's already fully formed. But she needs to excavate some memories.
Yeah. What about you, Spence? Anything stand out for you in this particular trailer?
Blockbuster.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I don't really know anything about Captain Marvel, so I'm really excited to see this movie.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Did any particular sequence or whatnot stand out for you? Anything in the trailer that you saw that really pulled you in?
No. Like, I was just, I'm ready to go. I'm already in the theater. Where's the movie?
Yeah. No, and I'm pretty sure there's a lot of people who are carrying that same mentality in terms of wanting to just go out and see it, wanting to get it started ready. Because, like we said, you're looking at a character that has been teased for the last 2 years. It's been talked about for the last 8 years, at least, because I know there was talks about bringing Captain Marvel into the first Avengers film and wanting to see that come to fruition, and obviously that just wasn't...
Well, and then Whedon wanted to put her in the Avengers... not a symbol, very, very, very end grouping
yeah.
in Age of Ultron.
Yeah.
Where you've got Falcon now on the team and Scarlet Witch and whatever. He wanted to have Captain Marvel just kind of floating there as well as a tease mm-hmm. without ever introducing her.
Yeah.
Which would have... No, we've got different plans for her. You can't do that.
Which would have drove fans insane. There's this film, this trailer alone has so many Easter eggs in it. It has so much great stuff. Like, if we had the time, we could probably comb through it with a, you know, fine-tooth comb. But, like, some of the great instances, like, that you see Captain Marvel with her helmet, which has that iconic mohawk look that she has in the more recent iterations of Captain Marvel.
Which is extremely recent
yes.
compared to the time that the character has been around.
Exactly.
I mean, she used to fly around in space with a bathing suit and a sash.
It's true.
And boots.
It's
and a little face mask. So this is like embracing the more modern contemporary character design is a really smart move on their behalf, on their part.
I agree 100%.
Because it's such a great signature suit.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. And like I said, getting a chance to see actors like Samuel L. Jackson kind of be a little bit more mobile, a little bit more active in the scenes. Bringing back Clark Gregg back into the fold, and then introducing the dynamic of the Kree-Skrull War.
Kree-Skrull.
Which, yeah. If you remember, Ronan the Accuser is a Kree, mm-hmm. and he actually, as Chad mentioned, he is in this film as Ronan. It doesn't say Ronan the Accuser, it says Ronan. So,
but he's got his big fancy hammer.
He does have his big fancy
probably
hammer.
Probably an accuser already. An accuser. Just for those of you who aren't comic nerds, accuser is like a title.
Yeah.
So like that's like an honorific. Mm-hmm. Calling him the accuser is a title that he's earned, a position of prominence in their society.
Yeah. And I think one of the most outstanding things about this film is its ability to just translate how iconic this particular heroine is going to be in terms of the overall MCU. I mean, just in that scene alone, just in that one little title card alone, where it says her and then it translates to a hero.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that is something that people will jump behind. Like, that is iconic. That is something that is impactful. That is something that's going to make waves. And knowing how much, like, Brie Larson is a advocate for female empowerment, and a lot of the names that are attached to this film, and a lot of the people who have been wanting to see Marvel finally have a female superhero film, one that is solely driven by a female, not like, oh, well, it's because she's a part of, like, not to say Winter Soldier wasn't a great movie, it is, but like, not like, you know, Scarlett Johansson, Black Widow, and Chris Evans's Captain America, them teaming up side by side, and oh yeah, we got our female superhero in there, and that's how it's gonna work. No, we finally have an instance where a prominent female superhero is going to have her due, and she's going to come out becoming the most powerful entity in the entire.
Well, and you've already got two other female super powered characters, mm-hmm. sort of teased. I mean, the Photon tease is a little bit more subtle because it's technically now the mother of Photon.
Yeah.
But since it's set in the 90s and we're going to time jump to the, you know, 2020-ish era, I mean, her daughter will be full grown,
yeah.
and probably able to become
Photon
or any of the number of other names that she's held, including Captain Marvel at one point.
Mm-hmm.
And also Minerva, played by Gemma Chan, who we recently saw in Crazy Rich Asians.
Yep.
Lesson 128, I believe. As Astrid, the cousin of one of the main characters who was trapped in a loveless marriage. But Gemma Chan, also very good on the BBC show Humans, which is a better Android thing than Extinction, like we talked about in our recent lesson 131.
There you go.
Anyway, Minerva also is Captain Marvel for a short period of time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't recall. I think she's a little unhinged. The Kree in general are a little unreliable in terms of the way they're portrayed in the comic pages. They're mm-hmm. usually, because they're a very warlike, superiority complex society. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a lot of swagger and confidence in them that's not always earned, and they do things without thinking them through. And I'm trying to recall, I think Minerva was kind of like not necessarily a good guy per se the entire time, but she did, you know, she did have the title and power Captain Marvel for a while. So anyway, there are a couple of other powerful women that are teased in the cast, and specifically in this trailer.
Yeah. Did you have anything to say about that, Spencer?
No, I was just listening.
Oh, okay. I want to pose a question to the table, and I want to see what your thoughts are, both of you guys, all of us. Seeing as we are obviously hitting the tail end of what is going to become a merger, or an absorption, I guess, if you will, of Fox, 20th Century Fox, into Disney, the likeliness that now we'll see some type of reboot or some type of portrayal of the X-Men type universe, or even the mutants, could possibly be imminent. What do you guys feel like the possibility is of seeing some type of maybe X-Men character, or even a mutant type character that has been in Fox's repertoire for some time, that's been in their arsenal, but they either have used it or haven't used it yet? Do you think there's any possibility of seeing anybody like that show up on screen now that we're well within that merger happening? And, I mean, it's going to happen. Spencer, what do you think?
Well, you mean like in Captain Marvel?
Yeah.
No, that deal hasn't gone through yet.
And?
I mean, like, generally, if they were to do it before that went through, that means they'd have to work out some other deal.
I'm just saying.
So that'd actually be really weird.
What about you, Chad?
The only character that makes sense to introduce in relation to Captain Marvel is Rogue. And Rogue is already far too prominent in what we have seen of the X-Men franchise with Fox, which isn't over yet, by the way. They still have Dark Phoenix coming out early next year.
That's right.
So Rogue is not one of the characters, as far as we know, that's in that particular installment. It is also set in the 90s, which is worth noting, and most likely involves another alien race called the Shi'ar. The Shi'ar tend to be more X-Men related, but they play with the big dog, so to speak. I mean, they're also at war with the Kree and the Skrull regularly, and, you know, whatever. Need to be policed by the Nova Corps from Xandar, and, you know, whatever. Mm. There's a lot that goes into the cosmic side of the Marvel comics universe that has not yet been translated to screen, but I don't think that they would jump the gun so much. There's a lot that they need to wrap up and jump into between Captain Marvel and Avengers 4, which she will also presumably feature fairly heavily in. So once all of that is wrapped up, then you might, by the end of Avengers 4, maybe you've got the seed of the idea that becomes mutants in the MCU. But I don't know that you need to go around introducing, you know, Wolverine or anything like that.
Darn.
In the 90s in Captain Marvel.
Well, who knows? I mean, I would like to believe that this, because Marvel is all about doing things precise, and who knows, maybe they may actually, when this film debuts, the deal had already gone through, so utilizing them for the film would, who knows?
Well, I will say one of the reasons why this is actually a topic of conversation among the comic book nerd community is because Captain Marvel actually was transferred in comics, kind of transferred from the Avengers to the X-Men for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a whole subset of her storyline that occurs as part of the X-Men canon, if you will. Obviously in the comics they were never separate. You know, the X-Men wasn't a separate canon from the Avengers or vice versa, but Captain Marvel was a featured player in X-Men comics for a while.
Yeah.
Rogue in particular, as a bad guy, when she first debuted, she was a child, and she was an antagonist, and she completely leached the power and personality of Captain Marvel out of Carol Danvers.
Oh, wow.
And so Carol was, I think she was comatose for a while, and then she was just normal and didn't have the powers and whatever, and eventually, down the road, as we've seen sort of teased in this trailer, she has a completely other personality called Binary, which is when she goes way OP. And you kind of get a bit of a tease of that when she's in her red and blue modern costume versus her green and black or green and blue Star Force costume, where she's part of this Kree strike team. You know, so when she's in her contemporary outfit and she's looking like she's lighting up like the sun, that kind of teases a further evolution of her power set, that actually, in many ways, it has a personality of its own. It's not Carol Danvers. It's Binary. It's a different character, fairly accurately stated, you know, inhabiting her body and accelerating her powers beyond what she would do with them. So I don't think they need to cover that whole wide swath of variety in one movie set in the 90s. But it's fun to see them tease it in the trailer.
No doubt. Well, as we said, the trailer's dropped, so if you haven't had a chance to check it out, by all means check it out, and we'd love to hear your thoughts. But there you go. So, Spencer, take it away.
This has been Extra Credit with the Film Lost Birds, and we'll see you next time.
That'll do.